Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Olivia, and we're so glad you're here today.
So we are back with friend of the pod, who now has his own podcast, Mr. Rob Abney. And truly, like, every time you come on, we have such a great conversation. So we're thrilled that you're back here today. And the three of us were kind of brainstorming what we wanted to talk about today. And I think this is going to be an interesting conversation, especially because there's been a lot of life updates from everybody here, I guess, since last time the three of us brought our minds together. So, Rob, why don't you just give us like a little update on what's been going on with you in the last couple of months?
Yeah. Well, first of all, don't put that much pressure on it, because this could be amazing or it could fall absolutely flat.
No. You know what? Either way,
we
love you.
I've never had a bad conversation with you. No, it hasn't been that many conversations, but...
I was just going to say, like, what are you counting this against?
Over 20 years, it's been 6 or 7, but, you know, they're always good.
Yeah, no, I think right now I just launched, not even just launched, it's been, what, 5 weeks? 5 episodes, or actually 6 weeks. I took a week off, launching my own podcast called Give It Time, which I would say is between you guys and my wife. You guys get the credit, because I wasn't going to do it. And you guys were like, you should do it. You should write a book. And Jen was like, they said you should write a book. I said it first. And I was like, well, what's the middle ground of that? Putting out a podcast that is essentially this, like, somewhat fun banter. With no real plan, just kind of going into it head first and seeing where we end up. But it's about parenting, relationship with parenting, relationship with our significant other. Me and Olivia did a divorce episode, but we've done a children with special needs episode, just launched a episode today about mental health, postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety. Dealing with kids who also have autism and anxiety. And so it's been a fun time of relearning about people who I've known for a few years, a lot of years, my whole lives, and just their stories, or allowing them to share their stories for the public to hear. So it's been a really interesting past couple of months of having these conversations with folks and learning new things about people who I thought I knew everything about.
I have a question for you, Rob, about the podcast. You know, you also have a background in marketing. And I think one of the interesting things for us with our podcast and starting our podcast was like looking at every episode and every story, right, with a different kind of marketing perspective. Mm-hmm. Do you find that a little bit when you're doing your podcast too?
Oh, for sure. I think the funny part is as soon as the 9-to-5 shuts down, my marketing brain turns off. And so, and I become someone who has no idea what marketing means and how you do it. So as I go through social and create stories and reels and all these other things that traditionally I coach people on how to do, I'm like, how do I do this? Like, how do I spin this? And just the nature of the topics have gone, when the first episode was me and my wife, like, I had fun with it because, like, what's she going to do, get mad at me? And so made fun in light of the conversation we were having. But as I started talking to other people where they're essentially trusting me to frame their story on their behalf using their words, there's so much responsibility and accountability that comes with that. That my anxiety flares up immediately because it's just the fear of saying the wrong thing and framing it incorrectly, misspeaking, making light of something that probably isn't funny, or the other side of that, not making fun of something to give it that levity that it needs. And so I think in putting together social plans and marketing plans, it is very difficult. And the other end of that is I think I have something amazing and I have to figure out how to get other people to see the amazingness in it in a 90-second clip or a 20-character sentence. And that I've realized that I have to take the pressure off that and realize why I was doing this. It was more for me just to talk to friends and share information and hope that eventually someone will catch it and share it and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, it's a whole different kind of ball game when you're carrying somebody else's story in your hands, right? I mean, and I'm the same way. I think a lot about how the story is going to be interpreted in the world, and are the people going to be happy with it? And yeah, it's a lot, but we love Give It Time, and I can tell you, I got amazing feedback from my episode. I had a lot of people that listened to it, and they really loved the conversation. So you're doing great, and we're really proud of you.
Appreciate it.
Jenny, would you like to give a little update since we last talked to Rob?
Well, I think Rob came to co-host when I was out because I took a week off when I got married.
Yep.
Who does that? Yeah. Jesus, yeah. You have commitments.
Yeah. Which was in September.
Rob co-hosted on L'Oreal's episode with me. Yeah.
And so that was my big update, which sort of gets us into the topic at hand today, which we were going to talk about the honeymoon period, which we're right now talking about our honeymoon, which I'm overwhelmed by. I'm not good at planning trips. So,
haven't gone yet.
No, we haven't gone yet. We took a week off. Like, we both took the week off directly after the wedding. And we stayed, we got married, in Edinburgh. But we went and we rented an Airbnb sort of up by the water because we were going to get married up by the water. And I'm really glad we did that because I think it just made it feel like a little bit special and different. And I mean, I don't think I have to explain why that was special, but, it was really lovely, and we got to sort of go to restaurants that aren't our locals, and, you know, it takes you out of your everyday day. And then we took the next week off, and we just, like, went on a hike and went out to dinner and, like, you know, just sort of were together. And I loved that, and that was great. Here's the thing. I'm a really bad sleeper, and I don't like sleeping away from home. Like, so the night before the wedding, we rented this Airbnb, and it was a 2-bedroom, and I didn't sleep. Like, and I just didn't sleep, which makes sense, right? Like, you're excited and stuff. But I also just, like, couldn't get comfortable. Like, it wasn't right. Like, I was too hot. Like, it was just bad. And so I love the idea of going away, and we will. We want to go someplace warm, and no place is really warm right now, like, in the area.
Yeah.
You know, because it's February. And by area, I mean, like, Europe at large. And so we kind of just want to make sure that when we're doing it because it's, like, exactly what we want and not because it's, like, the time. You know, like, oh, we should do that. And also I want to make sure I'll be able to sleep. I'm so nervous about – I don't like sleeping away from home. I like our bed.
That's the literal honeymoon. What about the – because technically you took a mental honeymoon, right?
Yes,
taking that week off and kind of just being in your bubble, which – what am I? I'm 13 years removed from that. Our bubble was 13 years ago.
I want to get into that. Yeah.
We will. And so for you – like, I kind of remember my honeymoon when Facebook remembers me or reminds me every year. But for you, because it's so fresh, like, what was that? Was there a realization that, like, now it's officially us?
Yeah. So lots of good questions. It brings up a lot. I always say, like, I found it really interesting to marry Thomas because I'm glad I wasn't looking for the relationship to change because I love the way he loves me, you know, and nothing felt like it changed. What felt like it changed was the depth of field. Like, when you have a lens, when you have two lenses and you kind of, like, are clicking them together, felt like the depth of field changed. Like, suddenly there was this understanding that, like, even though we'd said for a long time, like, we're always going to be together, we're not, you know, this, you're it for me. Suddenly it was like, no, this is really it. Like, you know, like, in a good way, it was like, oh my God, like, really. And so that was really different. We had a very interesting thing that happened that week, which was that we went on this hike. And I have a lot of anxiety around hiking. My ex was, like, a really big outdoors person, and he wanted me to be that person, and I just wasn't. And it was always really, like, we would go on a hike, but then, like, he would hike away, like, faster than me, which, like, now I know that, like, people are like, that's very bad etiquette in the hiking world. Like, it's very, very bad etiquette. And he often, like, would have the water, too. So I'd, like, he would, like, wait for me, but he would, like, hike away from me and then, like, wait for me. And then I'd have to get to them and we'd go hiking with other people. And it was fucking miserable for me. And so Thomas and I decided to go on this hike, and I was a little anxious about it, but we've been talking about, Olivia, how long have we been talking about going on that hike?
Probably months. I think you're saying, like,
no, yeah, a year. So when I was here back before we got engaged, we've been talking about going on the hike, and every time we'd plan for it, we'd make sandwiches the night before. I wouldn't sleep. I just wouldn't sleep that night, or or he wouldn't sleep. Like, it wasn't always me. It was it was always one of us. Like, one of us was always just not up to go on the hike. And every time he'd be like, I don't care about the hike. Like, I just want you to be happy. Like, do not worry about it. And so we finally got our shit together and we went on this hike, and it was a comedy of errors. Like, the bus let us off a stop too early because it wasn't going to that stop. So we had to cross a highway. And then we couldn't find the trailhead because there was construction. And the thing about hiking in Scotland versus hiking in New York, which is hiking in New York is beautiful. It's very tree covered. And so you're kind of hiking through the woods. In Scotland, you're hiking on up a bald mountain, which works for me. It really works for me because my anxiety is that I'm going to not want to hike anymore. And then it's going to be like, you just got to keep going. I mean, when I was with my ex, we did when I say I hiked, I did weekend long hikes with a backpack on where we stayed in shelters. Like, I was down.
The level of bad news bears that comes is bling out of my head right now. There's no world in which I ever do that.
There was one time when we were out with other people. It was a group of people, and we get to the shelter. So we was this one trip we stayed in these shelters, and it was not cheap. It was I don't know, $120 a night to stay in a place, and they gave you dinner and a hostel bed, basically. And we get there, and it's literally just a 45-degree angle of rocks in front of us. And I'm like, and then they're like, that's up there. This is the last scramble. I'm like, how the heck am I supposed to get up there? I just kept thinking to myself, my ancestors left Russia so that I didn't have to do this. And I felt so bitter and so angry. So
what else is $120 a night and all inclusive in the Bahamas?
Exactly. I'm I'm paying a lot of money to be
dangling from a cliff. No.
Exactly.
All I hear right now as you talk is you brought baggage to your bubble. That's all I hear.
The baggage I brought to the bubble and to this hike in particular. So we get there. So we can't find the trailhead, and we finally find it, and I start having a panic attack. Immediately I start having a panic attack because I have charted a route on my phone through all trails, and this isn't the route that I charted, and I don't know what the route that is in front of us is.
What a metaphor, by the way. Right, what a metaphor. Right?
By the way, I can see the route. It's not hidden. It's, you just go like that and you can see it. It's there. And if at any point I wanted to stop, we could turn around and stop. No. So right at the beginning of the trailhead, up this bald, not even a mountain, honestly, a knoll, I start having a real panic attack. And Thomas is right there with me, and he's like, you know, he's with me. This is who I've married, is he's with me, and he knows how to handle me when I have emotions, and he knows how to be with me. And we talk it through, and he's like, we can go home, we can do all these things. And I was like, no, let's do it. He'd also that day been like, let's bring our waterproofs. We should bring our waterproofs. It wasn't supposed to rain, but let's bring our waterproofs. So we set out. We're about, I don't know, 3 minutes in, and it starts raining. We pull out our waterproofs. And then it just gets worse. The weather just gets worse. But at this point, it's easy with him, right? So I'm having fun with it. And then his hiking boot breaks. And so they're old. They were old. They don't exist anymore. So it's kind of a tongue. The sole is flip-flopping around. And so then I'm like, oh, you know what I have? And my thing is, I'll do anything for a sandwich, pretty much. I love food. And so we had these sandwiches. So we're like, okay, well, you know, it's raining. Well, maybe we'll just take it easy, whatever. And the hiking boot breaks. And I was like, you know, we're like, we'll just go find some place to eat. And I take a rubber band, like one of my hair ties, and I fix his boot with a rubber band. So it's just like holding there. And then we're like going around, we're trying to find some place to eat. And then the other hiking boot breaks. And
very unprepared, it sounds like.
It was like the most ridiculous day. So, but what it ended up doing was it gave us this reason that we couldn't keep hiking. We ended up hiking, like, it wasn't insignificant, maybe a mile and a half or something. And we had lunch and it was wonderful. And we, you know, sat in sort of this protected area and we had lunch. And it started allowing me to reframe the narrative around that, because hiking isn't wildly important to Thomas, but, you know, he loves his country and he loves being outside, and I love walks. And so if you just tell me I'm going on a walk, I'm pretty happy. But it reframed it, allowed me to experience it in the sort of different context country-wise too. And so that really pops out. And then we went back to the pub that was like at the base of the mountain and took a nap together on a couch. But it was, yeah, so we did a lot of stuff like that and just like went out to dinner. And I love being in a bubble with him, and I loved not working and just like getting to, you know, we played a lot of poker and but stayed up late and listened to music, which is kind of our favorite vibe. So
yeah, well, that's cool, because I hear I hear so many metaphors and everything you just said. Mm-hmm. Right, working together, yeah. Seeing the bright side, like there's so many little pieces in there that I think I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, but that you witnessed them very, very quickly into your marriage. But I think, and not to pivot the conversation, but looking at me and Jen have been married for 13 years, known each other for 16 years. The number of times that we've had to kind of depend on each other, it doesn't get any easier. It just, there's more, the longer it is, the more opportunities to have to find a hair tie and figure out how to MacGyver something.
By the way, I fixed the other shoe too. I mean, it was ridiculous. The shoes went in the bin directly after. I have a question for you, and you don't have to answer it. So I remember when you got married, because as we've discussed, Rob and I went to high school together. Mm-hmm. And I remember when you got married, we were young.
Yeah. I was very young.
Yeah. What was that? Why? Why did you want to? I mean, I get it. If you've seen Jen, like, you understand why you want to lock it down.
pure aesthetics. That's all. It's just her face.
I mean, she seems wonderful. So like, I get it. But like, that wasn't what people were doing. And I know that the guys that you were hanging out with are still not, you know, like, we're not doing that.
Yeah, no, so I met her, I was 20. I told her I was 26, I think.
Oh my God. How did wait, back up. So when did she figure that one out?
I don't remember. Well, no, she figured it out fairly quickly. The way she tells the story, it took months and months, but like 2 weeks later, she figured it out. Or I think I just told her, but I don't remember if she told me her age and I was like, I got to come up, or if I just made up on the spot, assuming that she was older. But we got married 3 years later, 2.5 years. Well, actually, technically 2 years later, we got married at City Hall, and then we had another wedding for everyone else to let them celebrate a year later. And then a year after that, our first kid was born. So and as she pops in because she heard her name, we decided, or actually I decided I wanted to marry her because I loved her. I think the first date we went on was 2 days after we met, and we went on a date every day after that.
Yeah.
And I kind of disappeared from my entire circle. I was just with her. And we have since been together almost every single day since, for 16 years, which has its ups and downs. And so we had two honeymoon periods technically, because it was the first, which I think everyone, when they start dating, they kind of are absorbed with the other person. And we were around each other literally every day. And then we got married and went on a literal honeymoon. And I would even say when we had Lou, then we had another honeymoon, like the parental honeymoon. And all of it brought baggage, right? Our previous lives kind of intersected. And the reason why I brought up this topic is, for me, the honeymoon phase is a very interesting one. I think we only look at the bright side of it, being infatuated with someone. We don't look at the dark side of it, of being completely annoyed by someone else and having to fight those two things, those two thoughts of, I can't wait to see that person. And also I wish they would leave me alone. there's a lot of that. And so the looking at it, even now we are literally home next to each other. I work from home and she's always home. So we're literally around each other all day, every day. And then the kids coming home from school, or that is that separation, that break where we get to focus on something else. But I would say we have these mini spurt honeymoons every so often. Yesterday we were around each other all day. We were having the time of our lives. The day before I couldn't look at her. I was like, I need to be doing something else and you should go do something else too. And so there's these ebbs and flows of, being completely taken by someone and then also like, why don't you go for a walk by yourself? And we live through it. Like we always come back to some neutral ground at some point in time. But I would say the fun part of starting when I was young is I had a lot more energy, and was willing to give her as much energy as she needed. And she did the same. And as we get, if I would have gotten married now, I don't have the patience for anything or anyone. So who knows what, if we went on a hike, what that hike would look like.
I mean, probably like the thing is though, right? It's that reality doesn't exist. And so who you'd be now if you hadn't married Jen at 23? Big question mark, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's interesting because I met Thomas when I was 22 and he was 31. And we did not start dating then, obviously. And I like when we talk about it, we're both like, it would have been a mess. Like who we were at that at those ages, like it would have been so romantic and we would have probably loved each other then. And it would have, both of us were not ready. So like whatever would have happened between 23 and 36, if you got married now, like I think I've had to take a lot of inventory of, you know, of what went wrong in my last relationship and what part of that was my responsibility, you know? And it was none of it. No, none of it was my responsibility. No, but like what, you know, how I could have sort of how I played into it, how I allowed it to happen, what I allowed to happen, all of those things. You just come out of it a very different person. I am grateful personally that Thomas is tired. He's already done his skydiving. He's already done his party boy days. Like he used to work like two jobs and be in a band. I'll take the tired version. That works better for me personally.
I have a question.
No, I get that because I was just to jump on that. I have to walk back what I said because I was a complete mess at 20.
Yeah,
like a complete mess.
Yeah,
right. And so if you ask her, she had multiple honeymoons of meeting me. Me giving her the version that I needed her to see so that we could move on and into whatever relationship we're going to go on. Me realizing I was a mess and kind of bring her into that mess for a little bit and fixing that part of myself, and her getting to see the new and improve me, and live through that honeymoon period. And then it just kept reiterating, right? So there's multiple of them that we all lived through and we're still here to tell.
Wait, and I have two things to say to that. Sorry, Olivia. Is that one, it reminds me of that Esther Perel quote of like, you will fall in love with the same, if you do a relationship well, you will fall in love with the same person over and over again in different versions of them, right? And it's this constant love story. And then I saw, do you know Dan Savage, the sex columnist?
No.
He's great. I was telling Olivia, I listened to his podcast probably like since I was like 20. I don't really listen to it anymore, but I'm so familiar with his voice. And he was talking about how the construct of the relationships are a construct between the two people that are in the relationship, right? They don't really exist except for the fact that two people get together and say, let's pretend that this thing called a relationship exists. And when we enter in a relationship, we say, we put our best foot forward and we pretend to be who we want the other person to think we are. And in the best case scenario, that is met with empathy and understanding. And then we get to strive to be the person that we pretended to be. And so it's this idea of like, you make me want to be a better person. It's like, you make me want to be the person that I told you I was in the first place, you know? And I think in big ways and small ways, that's true. And without it being a lie, right? Like, it's not that I came to Thomas and I was like, I'm totally emotionally healthy and like, I'm never going to have to go to therapy. And like, I'm great. You know, he knew I was in therapy. He knew all these things about me, but you put your best foot forward and you're your most romantic, flirty self at first. And then you get to decide if you want to live up to that persona.
That's a whole other thing, right?
Yeah.
Like figuring out if I am adult enough to want to actually live up to that persona.
Yeah.
Or if I really just don't give a shit.
So this brings me to my question for you, Rob. So you didn't grow up with parents who were married.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it at 23 that you made the connection between I love this woman and I need to marry her, right? Because you could have just lived together. You could have just kind of like dated. So what was that hook, you know, that was like, this is the thing I need to do?
I have no idea. I didn't, because it's not like I dreamed of like getting married, having a family, because I didn't see marriage and all those cliche things. I'm more, not to like put a weird damper on it, but it was kind of convenient. I was with her all the time. Yeah. We lived together. We had an apartment together. I had my brownstone, which was down the road, and she could walk to my place. I could walk to her place. We did literally everything together. She was there for my graduation. I think we were about to get married after my graduation, which again, my mom had no idea and no one really knew. It was just us.
Yeah.
I knew that I wanted to be with her. And so we cemented it with a city hall marriage, and one of our good friends was there, and it was ours for a year. Like literally no one really knew. They knew we
what
were
was
engaged.
Like?
For me, it was difficult because so I had a wedding ring. And when we would go out with certain people, I would have to take it off, right?
And
always had to like remember who we were with and who knew what. And that side of it was exhausting sometimes, and making sure that we didn't slip up and say the wrong thing. But it was our thing, and it was our bonding moment of living the lie together. And making sure that we were always on the same page about what we were doing. And I think for all of the weirdness in that statement, it also helped us to depend on each other and protect each other. And so lots of good things came out of it. But it was a wild time to be 22, 23 and be married and going out with friends who didn't know and who knew we were dating, but still doing typical boy stuff, right?
And
me kind of having in a world where I at that point had very little self-control, having to have self-control because I made a promise and I had to honor that promise. So it was a wild time to be alive and to be married to someone who was older than me and had her own successes and her own things going on and us, because that was a big what's the word? Like just put a light on immaturity, because she had done so much by the time I met her.
Yeah.
And so being around, because she's older than me, so being around older people, and her and them knowing what she had accomplished, and them turning to you and go, "What do you do?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I just graduated." That's what I got going for me, right? There's a lot of talk about being a man. There's a lot of doubt and anxiety around, am I good enough for her? And at this point, it was too late. We were already married. So you get what you get. And you don't get upset.
I remember when I got married feeling like there was like an identity shift, right? To like becoming a wife. And I got married pretty young too. I was 26. And so did you feel that? Like, especially I think of like the ring as such a physical manifestation of like, now you are a husband. Like, did you have a moment or was that like gradual for you?
I think I struggled with the idea of being accountable to someone else. Mm. And so Well, because for all intents and purposes, I was the youngest, and so my mom let me do whatever the hell I wanted. I was with my friends, and we were constantly doing things. And then I met someone who I actually, and this goes back to something you said earlier, I put a version of myself in front of her that mm-hmm. some of it was true, some of it was totally made up, right? And so I had to now live up to that piece while still wanting to be my own person and keeping my independence and so on and so forth. So it created a lot of difficulties between our relationship because I chose to be with someone, but then also still wanted to be my own thing and had to live up to something that I said I was, which I actually wasn't yet. And maybe I would be there at some point in life, but at 20, 21, 22, 23, I wasn't there yet. So that caused a lot of arguments. And so when you talk about the honeymoon, our bubble kept popping because I wanted to do something on my own. I didn't want to have to ask for permission. And that's how I saw it, is I had to ask her for permission as opposed to just letting her know, hey, I'm going to do this and I'll see you later. And we'll be, which I think a lot of couples achieve that. But for the most part, I had difficulty with that because in my mind, I was, and again, her being older added to that dynamic, but I was asking her for permission. And in my mind, I made it up as she's older than me, so I have to ask. I told her that I was this kind of person, so I have to ask. And what bred out of that was lying and keeping it from her. And so again, the bubble kept popping, and then we'd have to blow another one and jump inside of it. It was difficult to navigate being a grown up while also still pretty much being a kid. And then I had a kid, which like throws it all into another space. So there was a lot of back and forth and up and down and spinning, and it was chaotic. Absolutely chaotic. And again, I can look at it now and see the chaos and see it for what it was and explain it in a very PG way. But in the moment, it was fiery. It was destructive. It was a lot of different negative words, not the positivity I spew today.
Well, yeah. And I think like there's such a, like you said this before, Rob, like we always see honeymoons as like this positive, right? It's like this golden time, right? But there's a side of honeymoons, like you said, that it's like the bubble bursting. And I definitely experienced this. And there's a fear there, right? There's like a huge like, oh shit, what did I do right here? Like this isn't maybe the person I thought I was marrying. Or, and I distinctly remember even being on my honeymoon. We went to Colonial Williamsburg, as the kids do, for our honeymoon.
The sexiest place in America, you know? Sexiest place,
yeah. And I remember we were walking at night. And I remember walking back from one of the restaurants or whatever. It was dark. It was pitch black, you know, in Colonial Williamsburg. And looking back
at him. There's no electricity.
There's no electricity. And looking back at this person that, you know, why we lived together and I thought I knew him and being like, huh, do I actually know this person? Or like, you know, and it was like a really scary feeling of like, I just committed myself to this person and they may not be the person that I thought. I was right, by the way. He wasn't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that's the end of that story.
Follow that instinct.
But even so, like, you know, I think like there, I guess my point is like, there is a dark side to the honeymoon period. And it can really shake you up. Did you experience those? But also, I guess my second question there is like, you did stay committed. And you guys have worked through all this stuff. And it's so beautiful to see that. So like, first part of the question is like, was there a dark side there that you got very like, oh no, what did I do? And B, like, what do you think has kept you guys blowing those new bubbles this whole time?
Yeah, that was my question too. Like, how have you found a way, like, as somebody who I've been married now for 5 months and you've been married for 13 years, like, how do you keep that spark alive? Like,
Rob, tell us the secret.
Tell us the secret.
Well, so two parts. So that first question of, wait, what'd you say?
The oh shit moment.
I don't know. Yes, I absolutely did, but I realized that she had them more often than me and still remained committed. because mm-hmm. I was the one screwing up, right?
Wait, is Jen there now? Can we ask her if she still has
been?
How has she still not been on this podcast? Is my question.
You figure that out. And, I, and every time we have these conversations, I'm like, shit, we'll did I say her. Too much? She's going to get so mad at me.
Email's going to her out to her later tonight.
She needs to tell her side of it. But yeah, no, I was the problem, not her. And so they're the oh shits were more. Well, the oh shits were more me saying, oh shit, did I screw this up? Yeah. And I the other part of that is I'm very charming, so I just charmed the pants off of her and said, don't worry about that fire literally. Over there. Just stay over here.
Yeah.
But we've remained committed through a lot of ups and downs. And I would say she's remained committed to me because I'm absolutely putting words in her mouth, but she absolutely loves me without a doubt. And I don't always know, and I've said this to her, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, right? Because at some point, like the armor chinks and you the sword gets through there. And no matter what, she's been by my side. And so I've, for better or for worse, I've maintained that I owe it to her to be by her side no matter what. Now, luckily for me, the baggage isn't the same, right? My baggage is much heavier than hers is. So it's not very hard for me to remain committed. But I say that laughing, but it's an absolutely serious comment. But I think for us, we were actually just talking about this today with our youngest having a temper tantrum, and it's practice. It's literally knowing that we're going to slip every single time, but as long as we get back up and try and go a little further, then that slip is okay. We digest and dissect a lot of these things now as actual adults. Because before there was just lots of yelling and screaming and fighting, and now we can actually have normal conversations and figure out the solution as opposed to just recounting what happened.
Right. I have a question, though, that goes from that. So I was actually, one of our friends, Laura Danger, is writing a book about relationships, and she asked me for some quotes for the book. And one of the questions she asked me, I'm going to ask you, which is, can a couple have a fresh start together, and what does that look like?
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult. There's no secret. I had my bouts with drugs and alcohol. And so that if talking about a fresh start and thinking about those behaviors and then something coming up now or let's say a few years ago that reminds her of those behaviors and her immediately wanting to go, well, this is what you used to do. And I'd be like, well, that has nothing to do with the conversation right now. But in her mind, it absolutely did. And it took a long time for us to be able to have a fight or an argument or a disagreement now and not bring up 13 years ago or 9 years ago and the incident that happened there that's still fresh in our mind. Because then what we end up arguing about is something that we can't fix from 13 years ago. And then we completely forget what we were arguing about in the first place. And so it took us a long time to get to that, to be able to have actual fresh starts where we say we forgive, say we not forget, but we will choose not to remember and then actually honor that. And me, I also am very analytical. And so even a look she would give me, I'd be like, oh, you're thinking about that time. And she's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. But we would just kind of create these things out of thin air and get nowhere with them. And I think now, and again, in our 16th year, we're finally figuring out how to have a disagreement about the near and now and solve the here and now problem and not even worry about the things that happened a decade ago or longer.
That was the thing that I was most grateful for when I, like, not most, but like relationship wise, when I left my ex, because we were together for 10 years, my ex and I, which is a long time. We were from 23 until 33 for me. And to be able to like know that I would walk into the next relationship and I wouldn't have to be like, I'm not going to do that thing I did when I was 24. Because Thomas doesn't know the thing that I did when I was 24. You know, I got to start fresh. That was really, that becomes a lot of weight. And so the ability to release that baggage together and say, we're not going to do this together. That's I think, very important, because otherwise you're just going to end up carrying too much weight together as a couple.
Yeah, you it's know, hard in real time. It's not a foolproof plan. Like, there are moments of absolute weakness. When we get into the, it's hard to be in something and pull yourself out of it. Like, having a third party in a room and say stop and be in the middle always, the referee is always awesome, but that doesn't happen in real life. And so it's one of those things where we have to go through it. And then once we go to our own corners and take deep breaths, we come back and we try and have the conversation that we were trying to have the first time.
We were just talking to Raina Boston on the podcast. By the way, you should have her on your podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
You guys would connect. She's amazing. But so I bring this up because she was talking about how she was with her husband for a long time and she was at the brink of asking for a divorce. And we get obviously a lot of people who come to us at that contemplation phase. And marriage doesn't always have to transition to divorce when it's not good. There is a way back. And so what do you think it is? And she did with her husband. She basically said to him, like, this isn't working. And they immediately, she said he gave up drinking. He decided to, because he wanted to make it work with her. What do you think it is about, and it doesn't have to be about you and Jen in particular, but like, what qualities need to be there in order to like want to make it work with that person that you committed to? Because some marriages don't end that way. And some, like, you can have that fresh start together.
Well, I don't think it's specific to marriage. I think it's specific to relationships. And again, I'm dealing with this with our youngest, where I looked him up and said, what are we trying to accomplish? Right. And I think that I had a philosophy class, many, many, many years ago. It was the one credit I needed to graduate. And it was a logic philosophical class. So it's all about defining the problem. And essentially it was proofs. It was like algebraic proofs, but you're writing them out. And so step one was always define the argument. Like, what in God's name are we talking about? Yeah. And then what are we trying to get to? And as long as you can get those two things in sync, everything else falls into place. The moment you don't describe or define the conversation, the moment you don't describe the language and make sure that you're both saying the same thing or defining the same thing, it all goes out the window because you're having two different conversations. And so that idea of, oh, it's a modern family. What's the plan, Phil? Right? Like, is the moment you figure out what you're actually trying to accomplish, everything else falls into place. And you can say, well, I don't want to do that. And if you don't want to do that, then obviously go your separate ways. And if you can commit to those things, and again, it's so much easier to say it out loud than it is to actually do it. Like, I can sit here and spew philosophical thoughts all day. Putting it into, or implementing it and putting it into practice, is a whole other ball game. And extremely difficult. And again, it's taken 16 years to kind of get to the spot that we are, and still have another 16 years to go to make it actually foolproof.
And I think sometimes you speak different languages. I mean, something I've learned kind of in my practice of communication and neurolinguistic stuff is you literally speak different languages. And that's what, like, internal family therapists, like internal family system therapists do, is they translate for people, right? Because, like, you might say, I hear you. And then your partner says, but I understand you. You're saying the same thing, but it's not processing as, like, the same language. And so,
we got into a big argument on Thursday and it was massive. And it was my anxiety took over and I just started going crazy and ramping up and saying things that had nothing to do with anything. She said something and I just ran with it, and she didn't even mean what she said, but we were speaking two different languages at that point. And it took her sending a message and saying, look, I'm sorry for what I said and I couldn't take it back. It came out but now the moment has passed and I'm apologizing. And then I had to give my whole spiel, and actually I apologized first because I was more wrong than she was. But that, A, something I would have never done is see where I went wrong and apologize for it. And then the other thing is have that conversation with you guys out loud, right? Now as I get older, I don't necessarily care about the judgment side of it. And I think the whole point of my podcast is putting it out there so that people can learn from each other's mistakes, learn from each other's successes, and see what they can implement and steal from each other and put into their everyday lives. I'm finding more and more how important that is. And so having, like, short of being given the actual details of what we were arguing about, which now I can't even fully remember if I'm being completely honest, the idea that there can't be a fresh start, I think is a bad thing to go into your lives with. You have to be willing to forgive yourself, forgive other people, especially someone who you said you were committed to. Now, when you forgive, it doesn't mean everything goes positive. Like the outcome could still be divorce or separation or whatever it may be. Yeah. But the ability to kind of be in agreement on that is I think step one. And then there, all the other steps kind of fall into place.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Go ahead, Ty.
I think you also genuinely have to believe, like you said, you know that Jen loves you. And I think that that is a very meaningful sentence and meaningless to a lot of people. Like when I was in my last relationship, when people would be like, well, does he love you? I'd be like, yeah, of course he loves me. And I don't think until you feel that kind of love that you're obviously getting from Jen, that you're like, yes, she loves me, you know, and you can sort of like feel it. It feels like this other, like this physical manifestation. It feels very real. And so through that, because she loves you and you know that, and also because you know her very well, you have to assume the best intentions from her. Mm-hmm. And so when everything's calmed down and you say, okay, you said this thing and it set me off, but I know that you weren't trying to hurt me. I know that your motivations are pure. And I think that if you can't sort of level set, that fresh start is not going to be right. If you can't say, or your motivations were fucked up, but you were trying to hurt me because you were in a place of pain, right? That's also something. But that ultimately somebody's, their motivations and their intentions with you are good. Like, I believe relationally across the board, if you can't assume somebody's good intentions with you, then you shouldn't be friends with them. Like, that's a dangerous person.
As you were talking, I remembered what we got into an argument about. I have high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And I made toast and I put a shit ton of butter on it. And she came in and she was, I know, butter's delicious. And she came in and she was like, you don't need that much butter. And I was just, in my mind, I was like, stop telling me what to do. And I don't remember what I said out loud, but she then got loud and was her anxiety was, I'm going to die. If I eat this butter, I'm going
to
die.
She doesn't want you to die. Right? Her and motivation that's she wants you to stay alive. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. What I took it as, like, stop yelling at me. Stop yelling at me and stop telling me what to do.
Stop
and
controlling it just me. Escalated stop making from me there. Feel old. Stop making me feel like, you know, all it's of
funny.
These things.
It's so funny. As we're talking, the relationship that comes to my mind that I have learned the most in is my relationship with Jenny. And, you know, I think that Jenny and I, we have learned a lot, you know, and over the years, especially working together and virtually, to manage. You know, we definitely have our four fights a year, or whatever. I wouldn't even call them fights.
It's maybe about two.
But I think so much of it is what you said, Rob. It's like usually it spirals from anxiety, right? Like, I'm not taking care of myself, and then Jenny's like, you need to go rest, and I'm like, I don't need to rest, don't tell me what to do, right? Or whatever it is, or you know, money scarcity or something like that, right? And then so much past stuff comes up, but we've had to really work through that, like, what is the actual problem here, right? What's the solution? And I think, like, so much of this is, like you said, Rob, it has nothing to do with husbands and wives or wives and wives or husbands and husbands, right? It has to do with, like, the human to human relationship. And, like, you have to do this with friends, right? Mm-hmm. And with business partners. And, you know, I think every relationship needs a reset sometimes, and to really, like, take a step back and say, like, how are you functioning as a person, and how can I support you? And are you supporting me in the way that I need? I mean, Jenny's learned a lot about supporting me as somebody with ADHD, and we don't function in the same way at all. And I've had to learn to, like, figure myself out so we could have productive conversations and things like that. And so, but I think because I know she loves me, right? It's the same thing. Because I know that it's a safe space, no matter what, there is a solution that's going to be found. It's just a matter of getting there.
There's always a solution. And I think, again, it's much easier in a calm state to see the validity in your words and say, yeah, I can absolutely take it for what it is and realize that it's impassioned because she loves me. In that moment, all bets are off. And hopefully I can rely on my training and get through that moment. But sometimes it doesn't work.
Well, before we let you go, like, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, I really love his perspective on this, what would be something if you are to, I don't know, just some wise words, if somebody's in a relationship, maybe it doesn't have to be marriage, but a relationship, and they're looking to kind of like have that fresh start a little bit, what would be just like a step you could take yourself in that positive direction?
Yeah, as simple as it sounds and as cliche as it sounds, it is all about deep breaths and taking a moment. I think, as someone who is as analytical as I am and who thinks and takes pauses between words to make sure I'm saying the sentence right, when the switch goes off, I say everything that comes to mind and it comes out very quickly and there's no pauses, there's no ums. And so I think taking a moment to hear the words and be honest and go, this is what I heard. This is that what you said,
right.
And giving someone an opportunity to say, no, that's not what I meant. This is what I actually meant is a great way to start. It takes a lot of practice. I still have not honed it in my personal life. In my professional life, I have the ability to sit there silently and hear everyone because I know what I want to get. But as soon as I walk out of my office and into the real world of life, I don't have that same ability, and that's what I'm practicing.
You know, I think it's so scary too. Like, the thing that I say is the story I'm telling myself is that, da, 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 and that's like, that reframes it. It's not you did this. It's the story I'm telling myself is this, but you have to feel so safe in that relationship because I know that I've been in relationships in the past where if I said that, they'd be like, oh, here we go again, you know, or something like that. And now I've been vulnerable after whatever explosion after whatever rupture we've had, I've been vulnerable and now I'm met with not kindness. So it's like that safety has to be there, that security, that trust has to be there that you are going to be well received. But this is what I heard, or the story I'm telling myself is.
Yeah, it's all communication, and communication
brings it on neutral ground.
It doesn't have to happen right then and there. I think that's the other side is, the advice is be honest in that moment. And sometimes it's like wait 3 hours and then have that conversation and say, this is why this all happened. This is what I heard, or this is what you said, and this is what set me up. We tend to apologize. And Jen actually sent me something that talked about a real apology. We tend to say, sorry that this happened, as opposed to sorry that I said this thing, which caused this, like giving it the full explanation. Yep. We kind of, and I'm guilty of it. I just wanted to be over with. So I just want to move to the next moment. So here, I'm sorry. Yeah. And I meant it. And you know, I meant it. So let's move on. And it's not always that simple. Sometimes we have to use a few more words to articulate exactly what we're sorry about, exactly what hurt us, what set us off, what it reminds us of, what it brings up. And again, it's a process that I think we all work for the rest of our lives to try and conquer.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen just because I say it out loud. It'll take some time.
Well, speaking of time, giving things time, can you remind us again about your podcast and where people can listen?
Yeah, the podcast is Give It Time. You can follow me on at Give It Time Podcast on Instagram and Give It Time Podcast on Facebook. And then it's on Spotify. Just search Give It Time Podcast. It comes up. We're in episode 5. They launch every Tuesday at 9 a.m., God willing. But that's the goal I set for myself. And we got a number of them coming up.
Yeah, and they're amazing conversations, really deep and thoughtful and insightful. So I know people would love to listen to them. Thank you, Rob. As always, we love having you here. And this was an awesome conversation. Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here, and we're so proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.